Shalom, everyone. I'm Josiah Jeffrey.
I'm Hosea Jeffrey.
And we're back studying the Torah portions. This week we're looking at the portion Vayera, which is from Exodus 6:2 to 9:35. We've already read the portion ahead of time, so if you'd like to do that as well, why don't you go ahead and pause the video and do that, and then we'll go ahead and get into discussing.
Vayera tells how God sends Moses and Aaron to confront Pharaoh and deliver the people of Israel, and how God begins to prove his power through the signs and devastating plagues he inflicts on Egypt, and through the special protection from the catastrophes which he grants to the people of Israel.
So this portion begins with God speaking to Moses and promising that he will deliver the sons of Israel and bring them back to the promised land. And God starts out by saying, I am Adonai, or Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh. And then he says, I appeared to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob as God Almighty, or El Shaddai. But by my name, Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, I did not make myself known to them. So I just found that pretty interesting right off the bat, because in the last portion we read that God revealed his name to Moses. Moses was like, what's your name? And God says, I'm Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, the God of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. Basically what this says is that even though in Genesis we read the patriarchs referring to God as Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, it seems like that's an anachronism really, because God is saying, the patriarchs didn't even know the name Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh. So when God showed up to Moses and he told Moses his name so that Moses could tell all the Israelites, he was revealing a part of himself that he didn't even reveal to Abraham, his friend, or Isaac or Jacob.
But this concept of revealing his name, Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, to the people of Israel, it's something which he'll continue to build on throughout the Torah. He's going to use this phrase, I am Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, over and over again to emphasize the importance of the people of Israel needing to listen to him.
Mm.
And the reason why is here in what he says when he goes on. Say therefore to the people of Israel, I am Adonai Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, and I will bring you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians, and I will deliver you from slavery to them, and I will redeem you with an outstretched arm and with great acts of judgment. I will take you to be my people, and I will be your God, and you shall know that I am Adonai your God, who has brought you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians.
Mm.
So what he's saying here is, I'm going to deliver the people of Israel from Egypt. And when I do that, I'm redeeming them. I'm taking them for myself, such that they belong to me, and I'm their God, and they are my people.
Mm.
And they're going to know me
to be their God.
Yeah. Adonai is the God who brought them up out of Egypt.
Mm. And more than that, he goes on, I will bring you to the land which I swore to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and I will give it to you for a possession. I am Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh. So he's connecting both delivering them from slavery and bringing them to the promised land, again connecting it back to the patriarchs. All of that is connected with he is Adonai, our God.
Exactly. He's the God who made the covenants. He is the God who purchased us, more or less, by redeeming us from Egypt. And I think this concept of redemption also extends to how Yeshua redeems us. He paid for us with his blood. It says we were bought with a price. We were slaves to sin.
Mm.
He delivered us. By his blood, he brought redemption. He did that so that we can serve him. We are free, like we're going to see Moses say to Pharaoh, let my people go that they may serve me.
Mm.
He's redeemed us for his service.
Mm.
And we are his people. And so we owe to him to serve him and to know him.
Mm. To know that he is our God.
Exactly. So Moses repeats all of this that God says to him. These promises, I'm going to deliver you and I'm going to be your God.
Mm.
He repeats them to the people of Israel. But unlike last time Moses came to the people of Israel, they don't believe him this time.
Mm.
They don't listen to him because he already told them, and things have only gotten worse. And we already saw how they were blaming Moses. Mm. Now they don't believe him. They aren't going to hear it at all.
Mm.
Their spirits have been broken, it says. So they're not even willing to consider freedom.
I found this to have messianic implications. Because basically what happened was Moses showed up and he said, God sent me. I'm your deliverer. I will bring you salvation. And the people of Israel were so happy. But then things got worse. Their suffering was made worse. Their hope was not immediately realized. And then they turned their back on their deliverer. And now he's promising, no, wait, that was just the beginning. I'm still going to save you. But they won't believe him. The same kind of thing happened with Yeshua, where he came and people were recognizing that he's the Messiah. They were saying, Hosanna, blessed is he who's coming in the name of Adonai, blessed is the son of David. They were saying all that, realizing this guy's probably the Messiah. But then when he died, and then the temple was destroyed, and then for 2,000 years we were without a homeland, and largely we were persecuted by Christians, Jews have decided, well, Yeshua didn't deliver us, so he must not be the Messiah. Not realizing he came, and then there has to be more suffering, and then he'll come again to salvation. So what we've seen from Moses so far is just the promise of deliverance, but he hasn't delivered on that promise yet. But I want to just use that as an exhortation to the Jewish people to say, just because Yeshua hasn't brought us all back from exile, he hasn't freed us from all of our enemies. No, he hasn't done that yet. But Moses didn't do that right away either. There's nothing that says that Yeshua had to do that all in one go. In fact, scripture makes it clear that God will have the Messiah sit at his right hand until he makes his enemies his footstool. Even though he hasn't physically come back and put all of our enemies under our feet and reestablished Israel, even though he hasn't done that yet, he has purchased the way of redemption through his blood. We do have salvation. We can have salvation now from our sins, which is the most important salvation. So yes, not all the messianic prophecies have been fulfilled yet, but that's no reason that Yeshua isn't the Messiah, because a ton of the messianic prophecies have been fulfilled. Some of the most important ones, such as Isaiah 53, and he will come again and he will save our people.
This concept of Moses coming and delivering to them a message, I was sent for your deliverance, and now they're not believing him. That's definitely a messianic parallel. It reminds me of Isaiah 53, which is prophesying about the Messiah, where it says, Adonai, who gave credence to the report they heard from us? Yeshua came proclaiming good news. The good news being, I'm here. I'm here to save you. If you just believe in me and follow me, you'll be saved. Moses is likewise proclaiming this message to the people of Israel. I have come for your deliverance. Follow me and I will take you out of this land away from the burdens of slavery. And the people don't listen to him. Why?
Because they're too heavy under the burdens of slavery.
Exactly. So also Yeshua said that we're all slaves of sin, but the Son can make you free. And he was proclaiming that message. You are slaves, but I'm here to free you. And because they were in that slavery of sin, they weren't open to hearing his message. But the door is still open. He is still offering that way right now to anyone who is willing to hear it. Just go up out of the land. So Moses, having told this message to the people of Israel, and they not having listened, God now says to Moses, go talk to Pharaoh and tell him this message and tell him, let the people of Israel go out of your land. And so Moses' reply is, the people of Israel wouldn't even listen to me. My own people wouldn't even listen to me. Why on earth would Pharaoh listen to me? God's reply is basically, you're right. There's no reason Pharaoh would listen to you, and he's not going to. But I'm going to force him to let the people out. I'm going to send signs, and I'm going to send plagues, and I'm going to afflict Egypt and bring it down to its knees. The Egyptians will know that I am Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, the God of Israel. And then you'll come up out of the land.
That's a very different, they will know that I am Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh. One is, they will know because of my deliverance of you. And one is, they will know because of my punishment of them.
Well, no.
But no, it's the deliverance of Israel.
They will know that I am Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh when I stretch out my hand against Egypt and bring out the people of Israel from among them. God is showing himself to his own people and to the other nations by his defense of his people Israel. By the way he delivers his people and sanctifies them and separates them and protects them from all their enemies.
And Israel punishes their enemies.
Yes. Israel sees that and knows he is our God. And Egypt sees that and knows he is their God. And he is real and he lives. And he is greater than all of our gods.
Right. Which is exactly why, I believe I mentioned this verse in a previous video, but the prophet Zechariah says that 10 men from all the generations will grab the garment of one Jew and say, "Let us go with you, for we have heard that God is with you." God will make his name known through the people of Israel, not just for the sake of Israel, but for the sake of all the nations. Anyone who makes themselves enemies of Israel and enemies of God, the God of Israel, they will be brought to their knees. But anyone who sees and is humble and says he is God, then they can come and serve the living God.
Yeah, it's showing how Israel can be the vehicle by which God brings others to himself. Even if they're not Israel, when they see how God uses Israel, they can come near to the God of Israel and they can serve that God, the one true God. So we as Israel, as Jews, can uniquely serve this purpose, are supposed to uniquely serve this purpose.
Absolutely.
So that everyone can see him. He's not our God only for us. He's our God so that in his treatment of us, everyone can see him.
Before God even goes into all of the signs and stuff that he's going to do to Pharaoh, he starts out by saying, when you go to Pharaoh, I will make you, Moses, as God to Pharaoh, and I will make Aaron be your prophet. So that's a really weird verse. There was actually something similar to it in the previous portion where he said, Aaron will be as a mouth for you, and you will be as God to him. So this is twice now that God has said that Moses will be like God. It's very interesting.
And I think it's another messianic parallel. God sent Moses to his people and said, you are like God. You're not just a prophet. Aaron is your prophet. Aaron is serving you. He's kind of preparing the way for you, you could say. But you, I'm sending you as one like God. In the same way, God sent Yeshua, the prophet like Moses. Yeshua, who is God.
God with us, Emmanuel.
Exactly. God sent Yeshua the same way he sent Moses. And as Moses is like God, he's an image of Yeshua, who is the one who was sent, who is God.
All of these messianic themes that we've been seeing in Exodus and a lot of them in Genesis, all that we've been seeing, they've been patterns which Yeshua will exemplify more so. And so in that, Moses is like God. You're God to Pharaoh. You're God to Aaron. Yeshua is God in the flesh. We've seen God appear in the form of a man. We've seen God send a deliverer who's like God. And so you put those together.
And another aspect of this is Aaron's capacity. Aaron is a prophet sent to speak the words of the one whom God sent, who is like God. In the same way, Yeshua picked his emissaries and sent them out. When he went up to the Father, he had his prophets, his emissaries, who proclaimed his words. There's no one else like this. No one except Moses sending Aaron and the prophet like Moses, Yeshua, sending forth his emissaries, his disciples, all of his followers, even you and me.
So after God's laid all this out, he then says, all right, now it's time for you to go and appear before Pharaoh. And I'm going to give you some miracles to do. The one that he says here is when he says, oh yeah, what God, work a miracle, throw your staff down and turn it into a snake. So that's already something that he said to Moses back at the burning bush. If you throw down your staff, it'll turn into a serpent. And so Moses tells Aaron to do this in the sight of Pharaoh, and it becomes a serpent.
It's actually Aaron's staff. And Aaron is the one who throws it.
Yeah.
Contrary to a lot of depictions where you see Moses as the one throwing the staff. And
yeah, it's not Moses throwing down the staff. It's not Moses saying, "Let my people go." It's that's Aaron.
Yeah, it's Aaron. But because Aaron, as we already said, he's serving as Moses' prophet.
Yeah, but after Aaron throws down his staff, Pharaoh calls his Egyptian magicians, and they are able to do the same thing. They have their staves and they turn them into serpents. But then Aaron's staff snake eats their staff snakes, which I find really awesome, because basically it's saying, yes, there are other supernatural powers out there. There are demonic spirits. There are other gods, quote unquote, but they're really not. But they did the same thing that God did, but God still did it better. And as we'll see going forward, there are things which God can do, which no other God can do.
Yeah, this confrontation here between Moses and Aaron and the magicians, and more specifically with their snake staffs, is kind of the beginning of the same thing that's going to happen throughout this portion. This is kind of foreshadowing what the relationship between Moses and the magicians is going to be.
God is about to really humiliate the gods of the Egyptians.
But Pharaoh, when he sees this miracle, isn't buying it. I mean, his magicians did the same thing. It says his heart was hardened. He's not listening to these Hebrews and their God.
Yeah, which it says he did not listen to them as Adonai had said. God had already said in the last
portion. God had already said it like 3 or 4 times now. He's not going to listen to you until I do all my wonders. Mm. And so God says, okay.
Now it's time for the wonders
part. Time for the wonders. And so God says to Moses, in the morning, go out to the Nile, where Pharaoh will be on the water. Take the staff, the same staff that turned into a serpent, Aaron's staff, and say, this is how you're going to know I'm Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh. I'm the one who told you, let my people go, now let them go. Here's how you're going to know. He's going to take the staff, put it in the water, and it's all going to turn to blood. All throughout Egypt, the whole Nile turns to blood. All the water taken from the Nile turns into blood. Whether it's in a canal or a pool or a bottle of water. Your water bottles are going to be full of blood.
Ugh.
The fish are going to die. Everything's going to stink.
You're going to have to find somewhere else to get your water.
And so Moses and Aaron do it. Aaron takes the staff, strikes the water. It's all blood. And Pharaoh sees it, but again, the magicians do the same thing.
Yeah.
And again, Pharaoh has his heart hardened. He says he didn't even take it to heart.
Yeah.
He completely does not care. It's like, eh, my magicians can do the same thing. I'm Pharaoh, you're puny Hebrews, and he goes home. Mm. But everyone in Egypt can't drink the water from the Nile. So it says they have to dig along the Nile.
Mm.
Basically sounds like they're getting well water because Egypt, whose source of wealth is the Nile River, no longer can use the Nile River.
When you think Egypt, you think the pyramids and you think the Nile. Mm-hmm. Egypt and Pharaoh in particular put their confidence in the Nile, and the pharaohs elevated themselves basically as their own kind of god, and basically, the Nile is mine. And so God here is humiliating that. Even though Pharaoh doesn't care, God is saying, no, I made the Nile. I can make the Nile blood.
Yeah, he's basically showing already from this one sign, I have a grip hold on the very fiber of your nation. And I can choke the life out of it anytime I want. But Pharaoh's hard to it. And so God's going to have to show it some more. This first plague is also kind of foreshadowing the last plague.
Mm.
He's already showing there's going to be blood everywhere.
These aren't just going to be calamities. These are going to be... death is going to be brought to you. There is going to be blood in Egypt.
And Pharaoh is not taking the hint.
So after a week goes by, God says to Moses, all right, it's time for round two. Say to Pharaoh, let my people go that they may serve me. If you don't, I'm going to send a bunch of frogs. Tons and tons and tons of frogs. They're going to be in your houses, on your beds, in your ovens. They're going to be all over the place, everywhere. And so God says to Moses to say to Aaron, stretch out your staff and make frogs go up all over all of Egypt. So he does, and there's frogs, just like God said. And the magicians are again able to do the same thing with their secret arts. But interestingly, Pharaoh then calls for Moses and Aaron to ask Adonai to take the frogs away. So even though the Egyptian magicians were able to replicate the magician, Pharaoh was still like, I need to ask Adonai to take the frogs away.
Well, Adonai was the one who said, I'm sending them, and then they appeared.
Yeah.
So he knows Adonai was the one who was sending them, so Adonai is the one who should take them away.
Mm.
Pharaoh says to Moses and Aaron, please tell God to take away the frogs, and you guys can go and do your sacrifices.
And interestingly, Moses says, you get the honor of picking what day the frogs get to go. So pick a day for God to get rid of all the frogs. And Pharaoh's like, tomorrow? And Moses is like, okay. And so the next day, all the frogs are gone. They're only in the Nile. And there are tons of dead frogs everywhere, piled in stinking heaps. So there's kind of like an after plague.
God was able to show his power, not only through the plague, but through the removal of it.
Mm.
That's what Moses says. Pick the day, and Pharaoh says tomorrow, and Moses says, be it as you say, so that you may know that there is no one like Adonai, our God. Moses is saying, God has the power to end this whenever he wants. And to prove it, he'll end it at the time you say.
Yeah. There's no chance for this to be a coincidence or anything. This is, like there was any chance of it being a coincidence when the whole Nile turns to blood, but
yeah.
God is just proving his power repeatedly, power and authority.
But Pharaoh, when he sees the frogs are gone, doesn't follow through on his promise.
Mm.
He said, I'll let you guys go and sacrifice, but he doesn't.
He violates his word.
He hardens his heart, just as God had said.
I found it really interesting, though, that Pharaoh hardened his heart when he saw there was relief, is what it says. So basically, it's like when something is going wrong, when things are going bad for him, he goes to God and says, please take this away. And when things are going fine again, he's like, oh, who cares about God? I don't care what he says.
Yeah, this plague is the first time that Pharaoh showed any hint of humility whatsoever. Mm.
But it was false humility.
Yeah, it was, I want this to end. And once it ended, he was like, I'm in charge again. Everything is under my control again.
Ugh.
What he didn't understand was God was the one who brought the frogs, and God was the one who took them away.
Mm.
God was in control the whole time.
Yeah.
And still was.
But Pharaoh just sees, oh, there's no plague anymore. Ha ha. And so God's like, all right, we need to teach Pharaoh this lesson. He says to Moses, time for a new plague. Stretch out your staff, and all the dust will become gnats or lice or some sort of pestilent insect. Is pestilent a word? And so there's gnats all over Egypt, and the magicians try to do the same thing, and they can't. So this is the first time that Moses has done something, and the magicians are unable to replicate it. And what's more, the magicians say to Pharaoh, this is the finger of God. So the magicians know, oh man, this is not something that we can do. This is not like the gods of Egypt can do. This is for real. But Pharaoh is still hardened to this. It says he did not listen to them, to the magicians. So he's not listening to anybody.
Yeah, we're seeing Pharaoh exalting himself against God.
Mm.
It's not just about, I don't know this God. God has amply proven himself by now.
Yeah.
This is about Pharaoh showing he is above any god.
Mm.
He doesn't care that the magicians say this is different. He is above any god.
It reminds me of Romans 1, where it says that though they knew him to be God, they refused to give him glory as God. And they were given up to the futility of their minds, and they're without excuse because the things of God are made evident. Pharaoh has no excuse here. God has made very clear, I'm God. I'm a better God than your gods. I've made my demands very clear. And Pharaoh's like, nah. I don't wanna.
Yeah, it's just pure, plain, simple hardness. And God's gonna use it. So now, God sends Moses, time for another plague. But first he has to talk to Pharaoh and say,
let my people go.
This time, you've already got gnats or lice.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm gonna add these swarms of flies. They're gonna be on everything.
Mm.
They're gonna be on all the people, filling all the houses, on the ground. Flies, flies, flies. But this time, I'm going to only do this in the places where the Egyptians live. The land of Goshen, where the people of Israel settled.
No flies.
No flies. He's going to set apart the land of his people.
Mm.
So that everyone else will know the God of Israel is a great God.
Hey, this is showing even more definitively, this isn't just some random powerful God that Moses went out and conjured up. This is the God of the Hebrews, the God of Israel. That's what makes Adonai unique from all of their gods. Not only is he more powerful, but he's the God of these Hebrews. God is showing, these are my people, and I set them apart, and there's a distinction between my people and your people.
So then Pharaoh, after this plague strikes, calls Moses and Aaron and is like, okay, clearly you guys need to serve this God. And the fact that Pharaoh is recognizing this
shows
that God is making his point, that he is the God of Israel and he is a great God.
Mm.
But Pharaoh is saying, I still don't want to let you go.
Sacrifice to God here.
Yeah, just stay in Egypt. You can serve your God here well enough. And Moses says, no, we can't. If we offer sacrifices to God, your people will stone us because our practices are an abomination to the Egyptians.
Mm.
And our God is
an abomination.
Yeah, he's not an Egyptian God. So if we try to serve him in Egypt, the Egyptians are going to kill us.
Mm.
We have to go. And Pharaoh says, fine, you can go, but don't go very far. But Moses says, don't cheat again.
He's like, you said you'd let us go last time. Go through with it this time.
It's crazy the way in which, like, Pharaoh, at first, he wasn't even willing to give God an audience.
Mm.
At this point, he's trying to negotiate with God. So, like, at first, it seems like maybe he's come down a little.
Mm.
But not really. He's still like, I'm great.
Mm.
Okay, fine. Maybe the God of the Hebrews is someone, but I'm still someone, too.
Yeah. We've seen Abraham negotiate with God, but he did it from a place of humility. Basically, appealing to God's character, making himself humble and saying, please forgive me if I come before you again, whatever. But Pharaoh is doing it out of a place of haughtiness. You can't go before the God of the universe in pride. God will cut you down.
And yet, God's showing great latitudes to Pharaoh. Moses is actually agreeing to negotiate with Pharaoh in some respects.
Mm.
He's reasoning with him. Rather than just saying, bow before God now, he's reasoning with him.
Every step of the way, God is giving Pharaoh every opportunity to do the right thing.
And after every time Pharaoh says, I'm sorry, okay, go ahead, the plague relents. Moses prays to God for Pharaoh. And God did it. He took away the swarm. And once again, Pharaoh, in his haughtiness, hardened his heart and didn't let them go. Mm-hmm. He lied again. This cheating the people of God, it reminds me of something we read back in Genesis when Laban kept cheating Jacob.
Mm.
He kept trying to change the wages. He kept saying, I'll pay you with this. And then he'd say, no, I didn't actually mean that. You're not going to get your wages.
Didn't Laban change his wages 10 times?
10 times. When Laban tried to do that, what did God do?
He ended up blessing Jacob and
humbling Laban, taking everything from Laban and giving it to Jacob. Mm. And so we're going to see, it's the same thing with Pharaoh. Mm. Pharaoh is the powerful one. Back in Joseph's time, the Pharaoh took Israel under his wing, said, I'll take care of you. Mm. But now Pharaoh is cheating the people. And he's trying to stay on top of them and use them for his own profit. And God is going to cut him down. God is going to humble him. Mm. God is going to take everything from Egypt and give it to Israel.
So now it's time for plague number 5, where God says that I am going to kill all of your animals. I'm going to send a severe pestilence on them. They're going to get sick, but there will be no animals that die among the sons of Israel in Goshen. Again, to show that there's a distinction. And God says there's going to be a definite time for this. He's going to do this tomorrow. Pharaoh got to set the date for when the frogs would leave. God is now setting the date for when the cattle disease is going to come. Mm-hmm. And so God does this, and all the livestock of Egypt died, but of the livestock of the sons of Israel, not one had died. And it says that Pharaoh even sent to the people of Israel to see what was up with their livestock, and he found out that there were none dead, but Pharaoh's heart was still hard, and he didn't let him go.
Yeah, God just smote all the animals of Egypt in a day. This is a step up. Mm. The previous plagues were all...
like inconveniences, almost. Like, nothing died.
Right.
They got water from somewhere else. They had stinking piles of frogs. They had bugs all over them. No one died.
Yeah, they were bad. They were enough to make things miserable for the people of Egypt. Mm. But it wasn't irreparable damage. This takes it to another level because the people of Egypt just got all their animals taken away.
Their animals are their livelihood. They use those for meat and for planting and for plowing and for all that. And so this is a major blow to the everyday lives of these Egyptians.
So now God's gone beyond proving his power to actually damaging Egypt. He's saying, I'm hurting you. I'm destroying you until you release my people.
Right now, he's killing their animals. That's a major hint to, I can kill your people too.
But Pharaoh is not taking the hint.
It's not even a hint anymore. He's blatantly saying this. He's blatantly demonstrating this. There's no hinting here. Pharaoh's just being super stubborn.
It's gotten to a point where he has an obligation to his people, his nation. Mm. And he's not fulfilling that obligation.
Yeah.
He is actively allowing his people to be destroyed because of his own arrogance. So God has to do it again. God says to Moses and Aaron, take some soot from a kiln and throw it in the air.
Where Pharaoh can see it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Go to Pharaoh.
Throw soot in the air. It shall become fine dust over all the land of Egypt and become boils and sores on man and beast throughout all the land of Egypt. So this soot that he's just throwing in the air, suddenly everyone has boils.
Festering wounds on the bodies of all the people and animals. Apparently they have some animals left. Maybe they got more. But man and beast now have boils all over them.
Yeah, God is now inflicting bodily harm on the people of Egypt.
Yeah. So he showed in the last plague, I have the power to kill. And now he's showing in this plague, I have the power to hurt people. Put those together. God's showing, I have the power to kill you.
And another thing it says about this plague is specifically that the magicians who were doing those signs by their secret arts before, they're covered in boils. They can't even stand before Moses because the boils are on them and on everyone.
So God didn't just outdo the magicians. He's humbling the magicians.
Yeah, he's basically taking them out of the picture. Mm. Before, you had Moses and Aaron, and you had Pharaoh, and you had the magicians, and the magicians were kind of like opposing Aaron. Now they can't even stand before them anymore. Mm. God's pushing them out of the picture. It's just you and me now, Pharaoh. The magicians were being an active stumbling block. They were actively standing in the way, trying to tell Pharaoh that God's not a great God. The gods of Egypt are great gods. Mm. They were trying to
undermine the message.
Undermine the message, exactly. It reminds me of what Paul had to say about the magicians, where he says, as those magicians stood against Moses, there are also people who stand against the truth of God. Men corrupted in mind, disqualified concerning the faith. There are people who are lovers of themselves, traitors, and lovers of pleasure more than lovers of God. The magicians were saying, we love our gods more than we love the true God. Mm. People who love themselves and other things more than God are like these magicians. They're opposers to God, and they tend to swerve other people away from the faith.
Like Pharaoh. They were basically bolstering Pharaoh in his rejection of God. All right, now that they're out of the picture, he'll still be rejecting God, right. But still, they were aiding in that.
But Paul tells us that like the magicians, these
opponents of the truth.
Yeah, these opponents will not advance any further, for their foolishness will be evident to all, as Moshe's opponents also became. These magicians have been totally, completely put to shame, out of the picture. They were supposed to be these great people who could wield spiritual powers. Mm. And now they're sick and weak and covered in boils, and they can't even stand before God's people. Mm. So also, people who put themselves above God. Don't oppose God. It's foolish. And everyone's going to see it one day. Mm.
And more than that, be watching out for people who are opposing God. These Egyptians were portraying themselves as someone to listen to, as someone with authority and power, saying, we have the power of God, essentially. But listening to them causes shame and death. So watch out for false voices that are teaching contrary to the truth of Messiah and the truth of the scriptures, because it will get you nowhere except in a world of pain. So after this plague boils, God again sends Moses to Pharaoh, saying, let my people go that they may serve me. This time I will send all my plagues on you and on your servants and on your people so that you will know that there is no one like me in all the earth. God's already proven this, but he's just going to say, I'm going to keep doing this over and over and over again until you know that I am the only one. And he then goes on to say, I could have wiped you off the face of the earth. I've shown that. I've shown my power. I could just completely wipe Egypt off the map. But I'm not. I have caused you to stand so that I can prove my power in you. I am using you, Pharaoh, to prove my power. And yet, you're still exalting yourself against my people. So, we've already seen God saying that he would harden Pharaoh's heart. We've also seen multiple times it said that Pharaoh hardened his own heart. And so God is saying, you're exalting yourself, but also I'm causing you to stand so that I can prove my power.
This battle would have been over a long time ago if God hadn't wanted Pharaoh to stand. Mm. If God hadn't wanted Pharaoh to resist so that he could show his power. We've already talked about how these various plagues have been showing God's power over various things, incrementally increasing the severity of what he's showing.
And so the longer Pharaoh draws this out, the more of God's power he can prove.
Yeah. And now God's getting to the point where it's like, I'm done illustrating, well, I'm not done illustrating it by plagues, but I'm going to spell it out for you so that you understand what I'm doing. I have the power to kill you. I just showed that to you. Now I'm telling you, I have the power to kill you. And so, if you don't listen to me, people are going to start dying.
This is where God is crossing that line. Human death. Here we go.
And he's saying the reason why it's having to come to this is because Pharaoh is still exalting himself against his people. Now, we've been talking about Pharaoh's haughtiness towards God. Mm.
God's saying it's toward his people, Israel.
Exactly. We've seen how Pharaoh's kind of trying to negotiate with God like he's on a level with him, which obviously he isn't.
Yeah.
But specifically, Pharaoh still has not even slightly begun to grasp the concept that the people of Israel belong to God. Mm. Not to Pharaoh. Pharaoh still thinks the people of Israel are his. That's why he's not letting them go, because he thinks he has the authority to keep them because they're his. He's made slaves of them. He thinks they're his property. They are not.
They are God's property. They're God's possession.
And God is the one redeeming them. But Pharaoh is resisting that, and that's the sense in which he's exalting himself against God's people. And so, also exalting himself against God. And so, because Pharaoh is continuing to do this, exalting himself against God's people, God says,
now I'm going to hurt your people. Now, interestingly, with this plague, God then tells them how they can avoid the plague. He says, I'm going to be sending hail, but you can bring your livestock and your servants and everybody inside, because if you leave them outside, they'll die. But if you bring them inside, they won't. And so it says that the one among the servants of Pharaoh who feared the word of Adonai made his servants and his livestock flee to the houses. But he who paid no regard to the word of Adonai left his servants and his livestock in the field. So what this is showing is that Pharaoh isn't the only one being obstinate to God here. Many of the common Egyptians were against God too. They didn't fear Adonai or respect him. But there were some who did. And God gave them a way out. The people who died from this plague were not undeserving. Everyone who feared God and who was like, you're right, God is the God of the Hebrews, and I know he's the one setting the plagues. I know he has the power, and I'm afraid of his plagues. They're all spared. But anyone who is still resistant and still does not listen to the word of God, they're the ones who get hurt by this plague.
Now, everyone in Egypt is hurt by this plague to some extent, because Moses also says,
all of your grain and your plants and all that, they're all going to be ripped to shreds.
Yeah. Everyone's going to lose their crops. And crops are the backbone of Egypt. Mm. That's why the Nile is so important, so they can grow their crops. So everyone's being hurt. But God is giving mercy to the people who fear him. He's saying, if you fear me enough to do what I say, you have a way out. You will escape with your life. And you'll escape with your livestock, too. Mm. Although, the livestock already died. So what's left of them is probably not very much. So Moses stretches out his hands, and there's hail in all the land of Egypt.
Except Goshen.
God, once again, separates Goshen, protects his people. Mm. They're unharmed. But for the Egyptians, there's hail such as Egypt had never had since its founding.
Hail mixed with fire. There are icy fireballs raining from the sky and killing people.
Yes, struck down every plant, every tree, every man, every beast, anything outside, completely decimated. Nothing like Egypt had ever seen since it was a nation. And Egypt's been a nation for a long time. Egypt was a nation by the time of Abraham. Just total decimation. Egypt is totally ruined. And yet, maybe not entirely, because every plant was struck down, but some crops hadn't grown yet. There were still more crops to come up that year. So, given a few months' time, the crops will regrow.
They'll have Egypt some ability to recover.
Egypt has been brought totally to its knees, but
God hasn't finished them off yet.
And God has shown, he has killed some of them, but they can still recover. So, even in this most wrathful plague of all he's done yet, God is still showing, I'm still willing to be lenient if you are willing to come to me humbly.
It's amazing that even though God is showing his wrath here, he's still showing himself to be a God of mercy, a God of unmerited favor. Pharaoh does not deserve any of this. Yes, God raised up Pharaoh and hardened him so he could show his power, but he's also showing his character, giving Pharaoh every opportunity to have an out. And Pharaoh continues to exalt himself.
Although this time, he calls Moses and Aaron, and this is probably the humblest he's been yet. He says, this time I have sinned.
This time. I just love that. This time. It's like,
so like, he's still not recognizing that he's been wrong from the beginning. Mm. So in that sense, he's still being arrogant. But he says, this time I've sinned. Adonai is in the right, and I and my people are in the wrong. Plead with Adonai. There has been enough of God's thunder and hail. I will let you go. Stay no longer. Some of this he's already said before. Mm. He's already said, I'll let you go.
But this is the first time he said, I was wrong.
Yeah.
I sinned. God is righteous.
And so Moses says, All right, I will stretch out my hands. The thunder will cease. There will be no more hail. Then he says, but as for you and your servants, I know that you do not yet fear God.
Moses has no illusions that Pharaoh has changed.
He's not even telling him, don't cheat this time. He knows he's going to cheat this time. But he says, so you will know that God is the God of all the earth. It will stop. And so it does stop. And yet again, Pharaoh hardens his heart and he doesn't let the people go.
Yeah.
It's the same thing we've seen. Nothing has changed. Why should it? Because God has shown every single reason why he should be humble.
And so now that God's shown all of his reasons, we'll see in the next portion how God is going to deliver a few more plagues to really beat Pharaoh into complete, total submission. He's proven his power, and now he's just punishing. And we'll see that in the next portion.
So, big takeaway, fear God and be humble toward him. God showed Pharaoh all his power, showed him all the reasons to fear him. And the people of Egypt who did fear him were given a way out. They were given a way to flee the coming wrath, escape the judgment. God has also given us all a way to escape the judgment through Yeshua. But we have to follow him because we fear the judgment. We believe
the word of God.
The word of God, and we're not puffed up against him. We recognize his authority and his power, that he is the one who created us and he is the one who will destroy us if we don't follow him. But if we do follow him, he gives mercy. He gives every possible way out. We just have to take it. Because Yeshua is the only possible way out. And he gave him for you. So fear God, fear his judgment, be humble and willing to accept the way out.
That wraps up the portion of Vayera. Next week we'll be looking at the portion Bo. So be sure to tune in for that. Thanks so much for watching. Be sure to like, share, comment, subscribe, and hit the notification bell to keep updated on new videos. And if you would, please consider sending us a donation to help us make more videos like these. We would really appreciate it. Thanks so much for watching, and we'll see you next week. God bless.